Welcome to a Christmas edition of Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and coming up in this hour, Christmas-themed mysteries. Later on, the Red Mystery Matter on yours truly, Johnny Dollar, but right now an episode of This Is Your FBI, an ABC broadcast heard on December 19, 1947, called The Return of Saint Nick.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society presents This Is Your FBI. This is your FBI, the official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Presented as a public service by the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community. For the past 3 weeks, the Equitable Life Assurance Society has been offering members of this radio audience the famous fact-finding chart for fathers and mothers. Tonight's FBI file, The Return of Saint Nick.
The United States is a young country in the family of nations, but already it has its share of national holidays. Holidays that belong to these 48 states. Those holidays are spaced from February to November, and of every one of those days, it can be said that they belong to the people of the United States exclusively. But there is one legal holiday observed in this country that does not belong to us exclusively, any more than it belongs to any nation. It, too, celebrates a birthday. A birthday which has come to mean much in the hearts of millions of people. A birthday we call Christmas. Tonight's file opens in an FBI field office located in a large eastern city. It is 2 days before Christmas, and Special Agent Jim Taylor has just entered the office of Agent in Charge, Sheridan.
Morning, Jim.
Morning, sir. I've got my report here on the Henderson case.
Fine. Just leave it on my desk.
All right.
You're officially on leave, aren't you, Jim?
Yes, sir, as of this morning. But I wanted to hand this in before I left.
Going out of town for the holiday?
That's right, sir. I'm flying home this afternoon.
Oh, how long since you've been home on Christmas?
Oh, not since before the war.
Well, have a nice trip, Jim.
Thank you, sir.
And a very Merry Christmas.
And the same to you, sir.
Mister?
Yes, what is it, son?
Where's the FBI?
Right down there at the end of the hall.
Thank you.
Wait a minute.
Huh?
What do you want with the FBI, son?
Well, we've got some trouble, and I thought they could help us.
Well, I'm a special agent. You think I could help?
Are you a G-man?
That's right. What kind of trouble have you got?
Well, Santa Claus is missing.
Is it? Well, now that is trouble.
His name is Mr. Norton, and we've got to find him. We looked all over.
Who looked all over?
All of us older fellas at the settlement house. We went every place.
All of you older fellas, huh?
Yeah.
How old are you, son?
I'll be 10 next month.
I see.
Can you help us, mister?
Well, I don't know, but I'll tell you what we'll do first. Let's go downstairs and get an ice cream soda, and you can tell me the whole story.
This is the settlement house, Mr. Taylor.
Oh, it's a nice-looking building.
Here, we go in this door.
Okay. Go ahead, son.
Mr. Williams' office isn't there. Gee, he's a nice man.
I'm sure he is. This door here?
Yeah. But first we must knock.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Come in.
Hello, Mr. Williams.
Hello, Eddie.
This is Mr. Taylor.
Well, how do you do, Mr. Taylor?
Glad to meet you, sir.
Mr. Taylor's a G-man.
He is?
Yeah, I got him to help us find Mr. Norton.
I see.
Well, I've got to run now. Choir practice starts in 10 minutes.
All right, Eddie, you go ahead. I'll explain everything to Mr. Taylor.
See you later, Eddie.
Okay.
I'm sorry you were bothered by Eddie, Mr. Taylor.
Well, no bother at all, Mr. Williams. Eddie made me feel genuinely concerned.
I'm sure he did. We're all very concerned about Mr. Norton.
Well, if there's anything at all I can do, unofficially, of course, I'd be very happy to.
That's very nice of you.
What happened to this Mr. Norton? Who is he?
Well, Pop Norton has worked here at the settlement house longer than anyone can remember.
I see. How old would you say he is?
I guess around 60 or 65.
Mm-hmm. And his job here?
Nothing in particular. He did odd jobs around the house in return for his room and board and a few dollars a month. The biggest job he had was being Santa Claus every year at the Christmas party.
Mm-hmm.
Every child in the house was crazy about him, and he loved every one of them in return.
Eddie said he was missing. Is that true?
Yes. I've no idea where he could have gone.
Well, what made him leave?
That's the odd part of it. No one seems to know. Yesterday, he sent one of the boys in with a note to me saying he was leaving immediately.
I see.
I went to his room, and he was gone. I'm afraid it's not going to be much of a Christmas for the children without Pop.
Well, Mr. Williams, do you mind if I take a look around his room?
Not at all.
Maybe I can find something there that will lead us to where Santa Claus is hiding. Williams, May I see you for a moment?
Certainly. Keep singing, boys. Let's walk over here. Did you find anything in Mr. Norton's room, Mr. Taylor?
Not a thing, Mr. Williams. The room was cleaned out. Tell me, what do you know about Mr. Norton? What did he do on his day off? Who were his friends?
He never took a day off that I can remember.
No.
The only pleasure he got out of life besides serving the kids was reading.
Mm-hmm.
He always had 3 or 4 books from the library down the street.
Now, I have a hunch Mr. Norton isn't going to be too difficult to find.
Why do you say that?
Well, from what you've told me, he's a man of about 60 with no outside interests. The only things he likes are reading and children. That kind of a man doesn't usually run very far.
Pardon me.
Certainly.
All right, boys, you can rest a while. Sorry, Mr. Taylor. Please go on.
Well, I was about to say that I think he's probably still here in the neighborhood.
Mr. Taylor! Mr. Taylor!
Oh, hello, Eddie.
Oh, excuse me, sir.
All right, Eddie.
Mr. Taylor, I've been working on the case.
Good for you, son. What did you find?
Well, I spoke to a boy who saw Pop just before he left.
Well, that's fine. What did he say?
He told me that he was playing with Pop yesterday when 2 ladies came into the gym.
2 ladies?
Yeah. Pop saw them, and he went and hid in the closet until they went away.
When was this, Eddie?
Just before milk.
Just before milk?
Oh, that's at 4:00. They all get milk and cookies.
Oh, I see. Well, thanks, Eddie. You've been a big help.
You're welcome, Mr. Taylor.
Oh, now, you stay here a minute, Eddie. I've got another job for you.
Gee, thanks.
Well, Mr. Williams, do you know the 2 women who came here yesterday?
Well, one of them was a Mrs. Chester. She's on the Board of Governors. She brought a wealthy friend of hers to try to interest her in contributing to the house.
I see. Do you know the friend's name?
No, I don't. But I can find it out from Mrs. Chester.
Oh, I'd appreciate you doing that. Now, Eddie, you ready for your assignment?
Yes, sir, anything.
All right. I want you to go to the library down the street and see if Mr. Norton is there.
Yes, sir.
And if he's not there, wait around for him. I think he might come in for some new books. Well, Mr. Sheridan, can I see you for a minute?
Certainly, Jim. Come on in.
Thank you.
I thought you'd be on your way home by now.
Yes, so did I.
What happened?
Well, when I left your office this morning, a young boy stopped me in the hall and asked for some help.
What kind of help?
Well, he belongs to the Murray Street Settlement House. It seems that their Santa Claus has disappeared.
What?
He wanted us to find him. I went back with him and talked to the head of the house.
What's the story?
Well, this Mr. Norton has worked at the Settlement House for about 30 years. Yesterday, he suddenly quit.
Why?
Nobody seems to know. Except that he saw 2 women come in and hid in a closet until they left. Then he packed all his belongings and disappeared.
I see.
I know this isn't our case, sir, but Well, I'd like to ask a favor.
What is it?
We have no picture of this man, sir, and I'd like to have an artist go over to the settlement house, talk to the kids, and make up a composite picture of Mr. Norton.
What do you want that for?
Oh, I have a hunch Mr. Norton is still in the neighborhood. I'd like to circulate the picture and see if we can't get him back to the settlement house in time to be Santa Claus again this year.
What about your trip home, Jim?
Oh, it can wait a day. I don't mind.
Well, you go ahead. We'll find an artist, and more than that, you can use any facilities we've got.
No, thanks very much, sir.
Excuse me. Sheridan speaking.
Is Mr. Taylor there?
Yes, just a moment. It's for you, Jim.
Oh, thanks. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Taylor. I've got that information for you.
Oh, fine.
The woman with Mrs. Chester yesterday was a Mrs. Norman Montgomery. She lives at 310 North Jackson Avenue.
Mrs. Norman Montgomery, 310 North Jackson Avenue. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Williams.
She must have been the one Pop was afraid of.
Oh, why do you say that?
Mrs. Chester has been on friendly terms with Pop for 15 years.
Oh, I see. Oh, Mr. Williams, I'm sending an artist over. I'd appreciate your letting him talk to all of the children so that he can make up a composite picture of Mr. Norton for us.
We'll do anything we can to help, Mr. Taylor.
Fine. He should be there in about, a half an hour.
Wait a minute. Eddie wants to talk to you.
Okay.
Here he is.
Hello, Mr. Taylor.
Hello, Eddie. What did you find out?
Nothing. I went to the library, like you said, but Pop never came.
Well, you go back there, Eddie, and keep watching. Don't give up so easily.
All right, Mr. Taylor. I'll go back right now.
Attaboy. And you tell all of your friends up there that if it's at all possible for the FBI to find Santa Claus, we'll have him there tomorrow night for that party.
Just a moment, please.
Mrs. Montgomery?
Yes?
My name is Taylor. I'm from the FBI. Here are my credentials, ma'am.
Oh, what can I do for you, Mr. Taylor?
I'd like to come in and talk to you, if you don't mind.
Come in.
Thank you.
What is it you want?
I'm checking up on something, and I'd like to ask you a few questions.
What sort of questions?
Well, the first one would be, were you at the Murray Street Settlement House yesterday?
Why... Yes, I was, with a Mrs. Chester. What has that to do with you?
Oh, it has nothing to do with me, Mrs. Montgomery, but it might have something to do with a man who disappeared.
What are you talking about?
Well, this man who disappeared seemed to be afraid of being seen by you, according to what I can gather.
What?
Well, that's merely a theory, Mrs. Montgomery.
Oh, why would he be afraid of me?
Well, that's what we don't know.
Who is this man?
Oh, I have a composite picture made by one of the artists in our office. Here. Well, do you recognize him?
Yes, I do. I haven't seen or talked with him in 30 years, but I know him.
Who is he?
He's my brother, Kenneth.
Well, why would your own brother try to avoid you?
He had a good reason.
And what's that, Mrs. Montgomery?
Kenneth is a common thief.
We will return in just a moment to tonight's unofficial case from the files of your FBI.
Now, a Christmas message to parents from the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States.
Fathers and mothers, on this night before Christmas, when the children are nestled all snug in their beds, when the stockings hang by the chimney with care, most of us realize, perhaps more strongly than at any other moment in the year, how much our children mean to us. At such a time, therefore, it is perhaps not unsuitable to discuss one of the most unselfish gifts a father can give to his family, the gift of life insurance. And now back to the FBI file, The Return of Saint Nick.
Hate is a vicious emotion which feeds upon itself and becomes greater as time goes on. It utterly destroys every person it possesses because It ruins their judgment by robbing them of their ability to see both sides of any question. Ultimately, it must warp the mind to such a degree that only a paramount shock can restore any degree of mental balance. As you can see from tonight's case from the files of your FBI, hate can make two members of the same family stop talking for 30 years, for a period of time that is almost half the allotted time of man on earth. That kind of hatred can consume a person, an industry, or a nation. For when a nation hates that way, the lone possible outlet is war. No one person can prevent a war between nations, but every one of you can make this a much merrier holiday season for yourself by resolving to live your life with full dignity as a human being and full respect for the rights of every other human being on the face of the earth. Tonight's file continues in the apartment of Mrs. Montgomery.
Mrs. Montgomery, would you mind telling me why you accuse your brother of being a common thief?
It's a family matter, Mr. Taylor, and I'd rather not discuss it.
I see.
I assume that your business with me is concluded?
Yes, I'm afraid it is, Mrs. Montgomery. And I'm sorry, because you're the one person I hope could help us find your brother.
What do you want to find him for? To arrest him?
Oh, no. No, until his disappearance, he worked at the Murray Street Settlement House. The children there love him. It's very important to them that he be found so he can play Santa Claus at their Christmas party.
I haven't seen him for 30 years. I have no idea where he might be, and frankly, I don't care.
Miss Montgomery, may I ask you again why you believe your brother is a thief?
Well, I might as well tell you the whole story. If you'll promise to keep it confidential. I naturally want no publicity.
Now, I assure you, your story will not be publicized.
Very well. More than 30 years ago, shortly after my father's death, Kenneth forged my name to a check for $10,000.
How did you find out that he did it?
It was perfectly obvious. He was an irresponsible young man. Shortly after the forgery, he suddenly had a lot of money.
Did anyone ask him where he got it?
Yes. Yes, he said he made it as a result of an investment. Patently, that was a lie.
Did you discover the forgery yourself, Mrs. Montgomery?
No, I didn't. The Mr. Bryant, who was the executor of my father's estate and an old friend of the family's, found out about it and came and told me.
Mm-hmm. And you never prosecuted the matter?
No. Mr. Bryant convinced me that I shouldn't risk ruining our family's name.
Mrs. Montgomery, did it ever occur to you that your brother might have been telling you the truth?
He couldn't have.
Well, if you don't mind my saying so, I think that anyone who has his record with children deserves more of a chance than that. Do you by any chance still have the forged check?
Yes, I have it.
Would you have any samples of your brother's handwriting of that period?
Yes. I kept all of the papers in the case in a special file.
And do you have that file handy?
Yes.
I wonder if I might borrow it.
For what purpose?
I'd like to see if a hunch I have about your brother's innocence is correct.
Hello, Mr. Taylor.
Oh, hello, Eddie. Here, have a chair.
Thanks.
Eddie, what are you doing wearing a mustache?
Well, I bought a disguise kit, Mr. Taylor. So I could see at the library and watch out for Mr. Norton without him recognizing me.
Oh, that's a good idea, Eddie. Well, did you see Mr. Norton?
Yes, I did.
Oh, when?
Well, he didn't show up at all last night. I stayed until the library closed.
Mm-hmm.
But you told me to stay on it, so I went back this morning. And he came to the library about 10 o'clock.
Did you talk to him?
I tried to talk to him, but he said he didn't know me.
He did?
Yeah, so I took off the red wig I was wearing. But he still said he didn't know me.
I didn't think he'd do that.
Then he turned around and walked out of the library. I trailed him, just like I saw a detective do in the movies.
Where did he go, Eddie?
I wrote down the address, Mr. Taylor. Here it is. 71 Vernon Avenue.
Vernon Avenue. That's not far from the settlement house, is it?
No, it's only about 2 blocks.
Well, good work, partner.
Here's that report from handwriting, Jim.
Oh, thanks, Carl. Thanks very much.
What's that, Mr. Taylor?
I had some papers analyzed by our handwriting expert, Eddie.
Are you going to see Pop now?
In a little while. But first, I've got another call to make. You go back over to the settlement house. I'll see you there later on. Good morning, Mrs. Montgomery.
Good morning.
May I come in?
Surely.
Thank you. Oh, I have some news about your brother.
What kind of news?
I took your file of papers down to the handwriting analysis department at our office.
Why did you do that?
Because I wanted them to study the signature on that forged check and then compare it with samples of your brother's handwriting.
I don't understand why you had them do all that work.
Well, Mrs. Montgomery, when this crime was committed, modern scientific handwriting analysis was not used in cases of this kind.
So?
So today it is possible for experts to examine handwriting and make sound judgment based on their studies. Those experts have just written a report stating that your brother did not forge that check.
I can't believe it.
Nevertheless, it's true. I know it isn't very polite to speak ill of the dead, but according to our studies, the executor of the estate, Mr. Bryant, is the man who forged that check.
Mr. Bryant?
That's right.
I don't know what to say.
Oh, I think that whatever you do have to say ought to be said to your brother.
But he's disappeared.
Oh, he was found this afternoon in a rooming house over on Vernon Avenue.
Mr. Taylor, I'm not a young woman anymore. But all I have left is my pride. Will you ask Kenneth to come to see me tonight?
Well, I'm sorry, Mrs. Montgomery. I think your brother has some pride himself. After all, he ran away when he was innocent. No, I'd suggest that if you want to see him, you meet us.
Where?
Well, if everything goes well, we'll be at the settlement house at 8 o'clock tonight.
Who's there?
Mr. Norton?
That's right.
I'd like to talk to you, sir.
Come in.
Thank you. Mr. Norton, I'm from the FBI. Here are my credentials.
What do you want here?
I came up here to ask you to come back to the settlement house.
I'm sorry, but I don't think that's any of your business.
Well, you're quite right, sir. It isn't. But may I ask you a question?
What is it?
Why did you leave?
I got tired of listening to all those kids yelling and screaming in my ears.
I find it pretty difficult to believe, sir, that anyone who spent 30 years with children as you have would suddenly get to dislike them that much.
Well, maybe that's not the reason. Maybe I've got reasons of my own that I don't want to talk about.
Could it possibly be because of your sister?
Who told you that?
Oh, I'm sorry if I seem to have pried into your affairs, Mr. Norton, but I've been to see your sister.
What for?
I went there because I was trying to find you. She told me about that check for $10,000.
She did?
Yes. And with the aid of the FBI laboratory, we showed your sister that you didn't forge your name. Mr. Bryant was the guilty one.
What did you say?
I said Mr. Bryant was the one who forged that check.
How do you know that?
Well, handwriting analysis proved it.
You told this to my sister?
Yes.
Did she believe you?
Yes, yes, she did. And she'd like to see you. She'd like to try to make amends. I asked her to come to the settlement house tonight.
I don't want to see her.
Oh, now, Mr. Norton. Look, it's Christmas Eve. This is no time to feel that way.
If she's coming to the settlement house, I won't go back there.
Now, look, Mr. Norton, you're not going to let all of those kids down. Now, come on. Put on your coat. If we hurry, we can get there for the beginning of the party.
Started to snow just in time. The kids will be happy. Makes it seem more like Christmas when it snows.
Sure does.
Yeah, here we are.
Go ahead, Mr. Norton.
Yeah, there you are. A little late. Suppose the party's already started.
Yes, I think so.
I better hurry upstairs and get into my Santa Claus suit.
Oh, it's in Mr. Williams' office. He told me to bring you right in.
Oh, fine.
You go ahead in, sir. I'll wait for you out here.
Yeah, thank you.
Hello, Ken.
Grace.
Mr. Taylor was kind enough to invite me to the party.
I know.
You haven't changed much, Ken.
Grace.
Ken, I'm so ashamed.
Oh, there now.
All those years, I falsely accused you.
Let's forget it, Grace. It's all in the past.
Can you ever forgive me?
Oh, I already have. Oh, look, this is no time for crying, Grace. Here's a hanky. Dry your eyes.
Thank you.
Now, help me on with this costume, will you?
Why, it's a Santa Claus suit.
Yeah. Yep. This is my annual job round here.
How wonderful.
I got to really hurry, too. The party's already started. But will you hand me that wig and beard?
Surely. Here you are.
The boys are starting to sing.
Yes.
I better be getting out there. Well, will you join me at the party, Grace?
Of course.
Come along.
The boys are waiting for you, Mr. Norton.
I know.
Merry Christmas, sir.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Taylor.
Soon we will all begin a new year, a year that can bring us happiness, prosperity, and a rich, full life. But those goals cannot be attained without work, without hard work and long concentration. There are a few bits of advice that are applicable to everyone, but there can be no doubt that for each of us, life will be richer and fuller if we follow one set rule. If we live every day during the coming year with the love and kindness in our heart that we have on Christmas Eve. For in that way lies peace on earth, goodwill towards man. Let me again remind you that the Equitable Life Assurance Society is offering its famous fact-finding chart for fathers and mothers. The incidents used in tonight's Equitable Life Assurance Society's broadcast are adapted from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. However, all names used are fictitious, and any similarity thereof to the names of persons living or dead is accidental. Tonight, the music was composed and conducted by Frederick Steiner. The author was Jerry D. Lewis. Your narrator was William Woodson, and Special Agent Taylor was played by Stacey Harris. This Is Your FBI is a Jerry Devine production. This is Larry Keating again wishing you a Merry, Merry Christmas from the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community, and inviting you to tune in again next week at the same time to This Is Your FBI. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
This Is Your FBI, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 19th of December, 1947, on ABC. That proved to be a popular holiday story, as it was repeated three more times in three consecutive years on the series, through 1950. You're listening to an hour of old-time radio Christmas mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. And now for America's favorite insurance investigator, it's yours truly, Johnny Deller, tackling the Red Mystery Matter, from December 20th, 1959, on CBS.
Johnny Deller.
Johnny, you
better come flying out here just about as fast as you can.
Who's that?
Johnny, this is Red.
Yeah, Red who?
Well, you know, your favorite fishing guide.
Red Barrett?
That's right.
Lake Mojave Resort out in Arizona?
Yes, sir.
Well, Red, you old scalawag, how are you, and how's the fishing?
Just great. That is, if you know where the good holes are.
And believe me, you do.
Now, that's really a fact, Johnny. I really do. I guess I'm the best fishing guide this country ever saw.
Yeah, and I suppose you think it's time I made another trip out there and tangle with some of those beautiful lunker bass.
Well, now, Johnny...
It's no good, Red. I just can't do it.
Now, you listen...
The way the work is piled up on me, I'm just about going crazy. I've been trying to get away for some kind of a vacation for weeks now, but I just can't do it.
Sounds to me like you need it, too.
Yeah, it's been a tough year, no let-up at all. Pat McCracken over at Universal Adjustment Bureau, half a dozen of my other contacts, they've been begging me to take some time off, but I just can't, Red. I'm not on a regular payroll. I'm a freelance, so I have to take on every assignment that's handed me, whether I like it or not.
Look, you mentioned Mr.
No use, Red, so don't make me feel any worse by talking about it.
Me? That was your idea.
Huh?
Did I say anything about fishing until you did?
Oh, now, wait. Do you mean there's some insurance matter I ought to look into out there?
It was this Pat McCracken you mentioned that said I better call you.
Oh, great. And he's the one who's been after me to take a rest. So, what's happened out there?
That's the thing. It ain't what has, but what's gonna happen.
Yeah? Like what? Come on, get to the point, Red.
Well, Johnny, when it does happen... Well, it's going to be pretty tragic for Lake Mojave Resort.
You mean somebody's trying to wreck the place? Something like that?
Much worse, Johnny. Much worse.
Well, what is it?
Well, I just don't think I ought to tell you over the phone.
But, Red, unless I know...
And if somebody was to hear me talking to you this way...
Red, look...
And anyhow, you'll find out soon enough when you get here, Johnny. And you won't like it. No, sir.
Red, quit stalling, will you?
Of course, if you just want to sit around up there in Hartford and let a terrible thing like this happen without even raising a finger. Well, I just can't believe you'd do that.
Look, will you stop beating around the bush and... Red? Red?
I can't tell you over the phone. It's too awful.
Now listen, you old goat.
But, Johnny, they say this airplane leaves New York City just about 12 o'clock noon.
So what?
So it'll get you in Las Vegas about 9:45 tonight. Okay?
What do you mean, okay?
I mean, just you be sure and be on it. And I know you will.
Oh, now look, I can't...
Goodbye, Johnny.
Red! Oh, if that crazy old coot thinks I'm going to fly all the way out there just because he... And yet, if he was serious...
CBS Radio brings you Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar. To the Universal Adjustment Bureau, Hartford, Connecticut. Attention, Mr. Pat McCracken. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Red Mystery matter. That crazy phone call from Red Barrett. I know that wild old character pretty well. I'm fully aware of his faculty for stretching the truth, making a couple of mountains out of a molehill or two. And once or twice before, I'd wound up making the trip across the country just to wet a fishing line with him. And yet... Those other times I'd fallen for his gag, I'd run headlong into serious insurance matters. Trouble with a capital T. And if he really meant what he said about something terrible impending at Lake Mojave Resort... Well, there was one way to find out. Expense account item 1, $153, plane fare, Hartford to New York to Las Vegas, Nevada. The awesome beauty of the clear night sky over the desert, with its billions of stars twinkling in the black sky above, is something I'll never tire of. The stars seem close enough to reach out and touch them. As the plane hit the glide path down to the landing strip at the south end of Las Vegas, the myriad many-colored lights of the city winked and sparkled like the lights on a gigantic Christmas tree. Yeah, from the air, Las Vegas, the fabulous city of chance, is just plain beautiful. I'd like to have stuck around Vegas for a while and tried my hand at some of the casinos and clubs along the Gambler's Alley they call the Strip, but I had other things to do. So, item two was $50 deposited on a rental car. And within minutes after the plane landed, I was heading south and east across the desert, down toward Davis Dam, down to Lake Mojave Resort. The desert. Mile after mile of nothing but sand and sagebrush and Joshua trees. Of tumbleweed and cactus. Of high plateaus and broad windswept mesas. Here and there, the skeleton of some animal was perished in the remorseless, terrible summer sun. And then suddenly, in the middle of it, the life-giving waters of Lake Mojave. At the south end of the lake, just above Davis Dam, is the resort, with its clean, comfortable motel, a good restaurant, tackle shop, and dock. Everything to warm the heart of a fisherman. Yeah, and in the bright light of the moon, I could see the lake itself, calm as a mill pond. That meant that unlike the cold and snow I'd left back east, here it was warm and perfect weather for fishing. It took a bit of self-control to keep from driving right on down to the dock. Instead, I circled the driveway to the office. As I pulled up to a stop, in spite of the hour, someone came out to greet me. It was my old friend Buster Favor, general factotum at the resort.
Yes, sir? Can I help you?
Yeah, Buster, I think you can.
What? Why, it's Johnny Dollar.
Yeah, none other. Hiya, Buster.
Johnny, it's a miracle.
I don't see why. When I get word there's trouble around here.
Oh, then you know, huh?
Buster, I only know that something
but
is about to...
Even the police haven't had a chance to get over here yet.
The police?
Johnny, I sure hope he's all right, that you can find him.
Yeah, find who?
Why, Red.
Red Barrett?
You mean you didn't know?
Buster, what's happened to him?
Johnny, Red has... Well, he's disappeared.
Oh?
And I could be awfully wrong, but from the looks of things, Johnny...
Wait a minute. You think somebody could have murdered him?
Come on. I'll take you over to his room. You can see for yourself.
Well, look, Red phoned me in Hartford, Buster. He told
you
me...
You think
that...
he had some premonition that something was going to happen to him?
Well, that's just it. He didn't seem worried about himself. All he would say
well,
was...
Well, it sure looks like he should have been worried, Johnny. Here now.
Holy.
Yeah?
The room, a housekeeping unit, was a shambles. Clothing pulled out of the drawers and closet, as though somebody had ransacked the place looking for something.
That stuff's all part of the uniform as he was wearing while he was working, Johnny. How much personal clothing and stuff he had, I don't exactly know. So, if anything...
The furniture, though none of it was actually broken, was overturned, cluttering up the floor. On the electric range in the kitchenette were the pots and pans he'd apparently used to cook his dinner. Some fish bones lay on a plate on the table.
Probably one of the bass he caught this afternoon. Poor old fellow went out fishing as usual, not realizing what was going to happen to him after he came back here and had his supper.
Now, wait. Wait a minute, Buster.
Yeah, Johnny?
That he left here in a hurry is pretty obvious.
Or his body was hauled out of here.
But I still don't see anything to indicate he was murdered or even badly hurt.
Well, look here, then.
Look, Buster, you know as well as I do how unpredictable Red is.
Well, I know,
always getting restless, always talking about going somewhere else, doing something else.
I know, Johnny,
look, he's
but...
told me a dozen times about a gold mine he hoped to go to back there and work someday, 50 or 60 miles north of here, up near Lake Mead. He's told me about offers to work as a guide for other fishing spots.
Johnny,
so what makes you think he didn't just pack up and leave for some other place, some other job?
Without letting us know? And leaving things this way?
Red? Sure, sure he would. So unless you can show me some good... Oh.
Yeah, Johnny. It's blood there on the floor. I'm sure of it.
Yeah. It's blood, all right.
It still hasn't even dried, either.
Yeah, I see. All right. When did you find he was missing?
When Ham Pratt... Well, you remember Ham.
The manager of this place, sure.
Well, after supper, Ham came over here to talk to him, and, well, this is what he found.
Do you know of any enemies he may have had?
Red? Oh, no, sir. Of course, all of us used to get out of patience with him now and then. Some of the crazy things he'd do, the wild stories he'd tell. But there wasn't one of us didn't love the crusty old coot. Same thing applied to everybody else who knew him.
Then why? Why would anybody want to do him in?
I don't know. I can't figure it out. But it sure looks like somebody did, Johnny. You can see the evidence yourself.
Yeah, maybe.
What do you mean by that?
Red's phone call that brought me out here. If he'd thought that he himself was in danger, don't you think he would have said so?
Yeah, I guess Red would have built it up, too. Would have made it sound real dramatic.
Sure he would. Sure he would. But instead, he told me something tragic was going to happen to the resort. Like what, Buster?
Like nothing I can possibly think of. But now, Johnny, this blood on the floor.
Yeah. Hey, did Red have a car?
Yeah.
Where is it?
It's gone, Johnny. Whoever did whatever they did to him must have used it to carry away his body. The poor old...
Buster! I've just got a lead on it.
Oh, I am. Come in.
You see, I phoned everybody up and down the lake to look out for... Johnny!
Ham, how are you?
Buster's told you about Red?
Yeah, and in spite of this so-called evidence around here, I still
Johnny simply doesn't believe that Red was murdered.
But there's blood on the floor, the way things were left around. Or, Johnny, have you some reason for thinking he wasn't?
First, I want some definite reason why he was.
But look, now, Johnny.
If you want the truth, I think you've both gone overboard about this.
Are you kidding?
Give me a reason. A reason for killing him, for anybody killing him. Just one good reason.
Well, now, Johnny.
Johnny, this blood on the floor.
Yeah. Yeah, this. Hmm.
What is it, Johnny?
Johnny?
You, haven't called in the police yet?
Oh, I was just about to when you arrived.
Don't you think I'd better call them then right away?
Well, yeah, Johnny, why don't you do that?
No.
No?
I've done something better, Johnny. I spread the word up and down the lake, all the way up the Colorado River by telephone. And listen, it's paid off. And that's what I came in here to tell you about.
Well?
I just got word that a car, same description as Red Barrett's, that was seen pulling off Highway 93 about 33 miles this side of Boulder City.
Whoops.
What? What, Johnny?
You want me to find poor old Red, huh?
Well, of course, if the poor old fella's still alive.
Then maybe I will. And when I do, I have a sneaking suspicion I may have a score to settle with you two.
Now, just a minute, Johnny. If you mean to imply that either of us did hear me...
I didn't say that.
Well, then, Johnny, what do you mean?
You don't know, Buster.
Well, if you think you can find Red and if I can be of any help to
no,
you...
No, no, no. That's exactly what I don't want.
Well, now, Johnny...
Just let me work out this little mystery myself.
Well, of course.
No help, no interference from either of you.
Johnny, this isn't like you. I don't understand.
You don't, huh?
I swear it.
Yeah? We'll see.
And now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Red Mystery Matter.
Suddenly, things had begun to add up. Yeah, from right in the beginning, when Red had mentioned over the phone that he'd talked with Pat McCracken at Universal Adjustment Bureau. Had Red called Pat, or vice versa? And there was the lamp there in Red's room, apparently knocked to the floor in a struggle. But not even the bulb was broken. The clothes that were left, only the uniforms he'd worn while at work. Was that supposed to mean that the only personal things he had were those he was wearing when he disappeared? Hardly. Then there was that spot of blood on the floor. A fish scale, a single scale in the middle of it. I had no microscope to examine that blood, probably wouldn't have known how to use it anyway. But I had a sneaking suspicion there was something very, very... Yeah. And knowing Red and Ham and Buster and Pat McCracken pretty well... Okay. The first thing I did after Ham and Buster left me alone was to look over the room again. And yes, one parcel of equipment that should have been there was conspicuously absent. I went down to the boat dock and found the old Arkansas Traveler that Red had always used to fish in. It was empty. Absolutely empty of the stuff I knew he always kept in it.
Johnny?
Wow. What are you doing up and around this time of night, Ham?
Oh, just sort of checking up on things.
Yeah? Or checking up on me?
Oh, now, Johnny. Hoping to find some lead on Red there in his boat?
I found exactly what I expected, Ham. Nothing.
I don't understand.
Don't you?
Johnny, what goes with you? You've certainly been acting kind of feisty this trip.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry.
Now, if you feel you have some lead on Red, on what may have happened to him, well...
Yeah. Yeah, I think I have. And you helped to give it to me.
I did.
But there's no point in following it up till morning.
What is the leaf?
No help, no interference, remember?
Okay, Johnny, whatever you say. No use doing anything till morning, eh?
That's right.
Then you,
Well, what?
Oh, I'm just thinking. Remember a couple of moonlight nights like this when you were here before, how you and I took the workboat and a couple of fishing rods, how we plugged those deep coves just above the dam?
Yeah. Yeah, we took some nice fish out of there, didn't we?
Yeah. I'm going to be blunt with you, Johnny. You aren't yourself. You're a bundle of nerves. Been working too hard.
Yeah, much too hard.
Well, one great cure for that. Why don't we go out there and pick us up a couple of nice bass?
Okay. Why not?
Unless, of course, you feel you ought to do something more about finding Red.
I told you, no more until morning. I also told you I'm sorry. Let's go fishing.
Sure, Johnny. I understand.
Yeah, I guess you do. Maybe I had been a little feisty, as Hammond put it. And he was right about the fishing out there in the smooth black water with the bright moonlight overhead. When those 2 6-pounders hit my lure and I carefully played them into the boat, believe me, they did more to bring me back to normal than anything else in the world could have. That night, for the first time in weeks, I slept like a baby. Then, first thing in the morning, well, the whole thing really wasn't too hard to figure out. Red was a fisherman every day of his life. But I'd found no sign of his tackle there in the room or in the boat he'd always used. In other words, no matter how or why he'd left, he himself must have taken those things with him. Also his personal clothes and stuff, but naturally not the uniforms that belonged to the resort. The blood on the floor from one of the bass he'd had for dinner, carefully put there after he'd turned the room inside out. As for his whereabouts, Ham had given me the clue when he told me Red's car had been seen at the highway turnoff 33 miles south of Boulder City. That turnoff led to only one place, a fishing camp at the lower end of Lake Mead, known as Temple Bar. And when I got there, sure enough, waiting for me in his outboard, beside the dock, Red Barrett.
All ready for you, Johnny.
Why, Red, you rascal.
Got an extra rod and reel and a bucket of live bait. You and me will go out there and slay him. Get in, Johnny. Get in.
Sure, Red, why not?
Ah, it's a boy. Here we go. Yeah, I just knew a smart man like you could track me down.
Hey, you're working here now, huh?
Well, I got kind of restless and thought maybe I'd make a change. And as long as Ham Pratt was willing...
Then Ham was in on this plot to get me out here.
Why, sure he was.
And the terrible things to happen at Lake Mojave?
Why, of course, Johnny. They've lost me, haven't they?
Ah, you old son of a gun. Hey, Buster in on it, too?
No, Ham's probably telling him about it right now. Probably showing him the letter he got from Mr. McCracken.
McCracken? Pat McCracken?
Yeah. Now, maybe you better read this one that he wrote to me. First part's just the usual howdy-do's, but here.
And Red, I'm convinced a man can take only so much, even Johnny Dollar. And I'm afraid that unless he gets some rest and relaxation, he'll crack up one of these days.
So if you and Ham Pratt can somehow contrive to get him out there for some of that fishing he loves so much, go to it. If he catches on, if he starts worrying about the expense, tell him it's on the house. Tell him... tell him Merry Christmas. Sincerely yours.
Well, God bless Pat McCracken. As for you, Red, you old reprobate...
Johnny... There's a hole over near the jib beds where there's an old 10-pounder laying under a rock. Just wait for you and me.
Brother, let's go. A very wise man once said that the time a man spends in fishing is never deducted from his lifespan. And you know something? I, for one, am convinced that he was right. So... Well, Merry Christmas to you all, too. All of you. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Our star will return in just a moment. Every year, some Christmas celebrations are ruined by fire. A little precaution can prevent a Christmas fire from happening in your home. First of all, make sure your tree is on a firm foundation so it can't fall over. Then be sure to use only approved lighting. Wiring that's frayed may be dangerous. Replace it. Never use lighted candles. Let all the glow of Christmas come from within, not from fire. With a safe Christmas planned, here's an idea for Christmas giving.
Almost Christmas, no time to lose. Lots and lots of gifts to choose.
Give him,
give her,
a gift set by Yardley.
For her, an array of all new Yardley gifts, $1.50 to $13.50. A Yardley Red Roses Spray Mist and Soap set, $3.50. All prices plus tax. Yardley.
Give him,
give her,
a gift set by Yardley.
Now, here is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, a man, a girl, and a gangster. That's right. They add up to trouble for me. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is written, produced, and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in our cast were Forrest Lewis, Barney Phillips, Alan Reed Sr., and Lawrence Dobkin. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Dan Coverley speaking.
Now stay tuned for Suspense, which follows next on the CBS Radio Network.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned to Yesterday from December 20th, 1959 on CBS. And that brings to a close this hour of Christmas shows on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Happy holidays.